Yeah, so let's start with this talk. My name is Marek Vashud, and this talk is about U-Boot as a BSCI provider. Now, BSCI stands for a Power State Coordination Interface. It's a standard drafted by ARM, and it is used on ARM system. It defines a software interface that's used by things like bootloaders, operating systems, to bring up CPU cores, stop the CPU cores, do a system suspend, resume, perform reboot, and power off. The presence of the BSCI interface is mandatory on ARMv8. It is optional on ARMv7, although you can find ARMv7 systems which do also provide BSCI. There is a related interface which is called an SCMI, and this is used for clock management, power domain management of devices. You may sometimes see that there are systems which misuse BSCI for this kind of functionality, like power domain on and off, and this is wrong. So that all goes into SCMI. We will not talk about SCMI, however, right now. The reason why BSCI exists is multiple fold. One of them is convenience. The thing is, doing these things like CPU core on, off, suspend, resume, this is a really horribly complex process, and hardware is full of bugs. So implementing it correctly so that your system doesn't randomly crash during suspend, for example, the code is very complex. And if you want to run multiple OSs on an ARM machine, there is a balancing act in place. Basically, what ARM decided was to implement this once, implement it properly, and then expose to the operating system an interface which allows it to say, okay, well, now suspend or now bring up a CPU core. And all this horrible complexity and all the workarounds for the hardware bugs, they are hidden in this sort of an interface which is implemented once. So that pretty much covers the convenience, the complexity. The other thing is, the thing which brings up CPU cores may interact with, say, regulators. And this could potentially damage the hardware if you do it wrong. So if the hardware is very fragile, it may also be a good idea to hide this from the operating system, which may crash and do something wrong, and then potentially damage the hardware. That's why it's hidden in the firmware. However, what you may argue is that if we put this functionality in the firmware, what happens if the firmware is buggy? Then you have to update the firmware, which essentially means updating your bootloader, which is dangerous operation unless you are very well prepared for that. So it can break your machine if you do it wrong. So all of this is really a balancing act. Why not put it into the OS or into the bootloader? One completely separate reason for existence of this API is virtualization. So in a virtualized setup on ARM, the secure monitor firmware, which is running in the highest privilege level, provides a BSCI interface to the OS running in lower privilege mode, which is like the EL2. And that OS itself can provide the same looking BSCI interface to the OS running in virtualization, so in EL1. And to the OS, this looks very much identical, whether it's running in virtualization or whether it's running on bare metal. So for that purpose also, there is the BSCI interface, which allows you to bring up CPU cores, which in one case may be virtual, in the other case they are the actual real CPU cores, the hardware ones. Now, the way BSCI is implemented is by means of SMCCC, which stands for SMC Call Convention, which is another standard drafted by ARM. And it basically tells you that on ARM64, there are two instructions, one of them SMC, the other HVC instruction, and they both trigger a synchronous exception. In case of the SMC instruction, the synchronous exception lands in exception level 3. In case of the HVC, the synchronous exception lands in EL2. And the SMCCC also tells you which CPU registers to set up before you call the SMC and which CPU registers are then used as a return value from the SMC or HVC instruction. As for the exception levels, there is four of them on ARM 64. EL3 to EL0. The EL3 is the most privileged one. This is where the secure monitor firmware runs, and this is also where the code which brings up the CPU cores and does the suspend, resume, and all this is running. EL2 is the less privileged, and this is where operating system is running, the one which is running on bare metal. You can use SMC from the EL2 into the EL3 to request services from the secure monitor. EL1 is used for virtualized OS, so an OS which is running in virtualization can do HVC, which would trigger a synchronous exception in EL2 in the OS which is running on the bare metal, and the OS running on the bare metal may provide some services to the virtualized OS this way. You can read all about these exception levels in the ARM specification. If you download the slides which are in Penta, you can use all these links which will redirect you to all the specifications, so you can just read all about that. Suffice to say, there are these four exception levels on ARM for now. The way the SMC actually works is that if you want to do an SMC request, you're supposed to set up CPU register 0 with a function ID, which basically says what kind of request you want to do. You want performed by the secure monitor or by the OS. And then you're supposed to set up 6 additional parameters, X1 all the way to X6, which are parameters for this function which you want to trigger. With this setup, you have to do the SMC or HVC instruction. This instruction triggers synchronous exception. The synchronous exception then makes the CPU elevate its exception level to the higher one, and trigger the exception handler, which validates that the function ID is even okay for you to call, that the parameters for the function are okay at all. And if all of this is correct, then the request, which is represented by this function ID, is then performed by the secure monitor firmware or by the OS. Once the request is performed, the secure monitor firmware or the OS will set up 4 additional registers, X0 to X3, with the return values, and will return just past the SMC or HVC instruction into the calling software and resume execution at the exception level of the calling software. And then the calling software can collect the result of this call in the registers X0 to X3 and do something about this. This is roughly how it works. About these function IDs. These function IDs are the requests you can do to the secure monitor firmware or to the OS running in the bare metal. You can actually not find them in the SMCCC specification because the SMCCC specification just says there are function IDs. But the blocks of these function IDs are distributed across various specifications like the PSCI specification, which has 2 blocks carved out of the function IDs, or the SCMI specification, which has its own set of function IDs. The PSCI specification has 2 sets of function IDs. One is for 32-bit PSCI calls, the other is for 64-bit PSCI calls. The only reason for this is that 64-bit PSCI calls just take 64-bit parameters, so the function signature is slightly different. But beyond that, it's very much compatible, the 32-bit and 64-bit PSCI functions and function implementations. So you can look up the function IDs, obviously, in the PSCI specification. You can also look them up in the U-boot sources. You can look them up in the Linux kernel sources. This stuff here is coming from the U-boot sources. Hello. So what you can see here is, for example, CPU on PSCI function, which is actually a macro, which is expanded to like C4 plus 3, right? So this would actually go into the SMC register X0 before you call the SMC instruction. Now, there are multiple callers of the SMC instruction as well as multiple handlers. There are callers in U-boot. This is all built around this fvcall.c SMC call and HVC call implementation. In Linux, the BSCI implementation lives in drivers firmware BSCI, BSCI.c. The handlers are either in ATF or in the U-boot itself. The U-boot SMC callers are all built around this SMC call function. So like anything in U-boot which does BSCI interaction is essentially SMC call, BSCI function name, and then some parameters for the BSCI function. If you look at the SMC call in U-boot, actually, it very much copies what's in the SMCCC. So that means setup register X0 with function ID, setup couple of parameter registers X1 to X6, then trigger the SMC instruction. Once the SMC instruction request is done, the execution will return past the SMC instruction and continue here, where the U-boot code will collect the registers which were set up by the secure monitor firmware as the return values from the SMC instruction, and then you can use them in the U-boot code. There is a matching HVC call a little bit further in this fvcall.c in U-boot if you want to look it up, which is used for the EL2 HVC call. U-boot has the bonus thing that it actually has a command which is called NSMC. So in the U-boot command line, you can experiment with the SMC calls. And it's a command which takes up to seven parameters. The first parameter is the SMC function ID, and then the six additional parameters are the parameters for the SMC function. So if you want to do like a BSCI call, I think this one is like BSCI version here. You can do it like from the U-boot command line, and you can experiment with this all you want. The return value from the SMC command is four values, which is the X0, X1, X3, and X0, X1, X2, and X3 CPU registers. So you can then analyze what you got out of the SMC call, if it didn't fail, obviously. As for the Linux kernel, there is this additional thing in Linux that when the BSCI firmware driver is probing, Linux has to figure out whether it is running on bare metal or in virtualization. So if Linux is running on bare metal, then it uses the SMC instruction to communicate with the secure monitor firmware. Otherwise, it's using the HVC instruction, if it's running in virtualization, to communicate with the OS that's running on the bare metal. But beyond that, the BSCI firmware driver in Linux just exposes the BSCI functions as a wrapper around SMC calls, and the actual SMC instruction call and the setup of the X0 all the way to X6 registers, this is implemented in smccccall.s in ARC64. So it's very much yet again a wrapper around the SMC instruction, no matter whether it's U-boot, whether it's Linux. But now let's talk about the more interesting part, which are the handlers. And for one to be an SMC handler, the CPU core has to fulfill a couple of requirements. The main requirement to handle SMC exceptions is to be able to even receive the exceptions. So the CPU core basically has to be able to receive exception in EL3 if it wants to handle SMC. If you are on an SMP system, you also have to be able to receive IPIs, interprocessor interrupts, because in order to bring up secondary cores, it is necessary for the secondary cores to be able to receive IPIs to break them out of a loop in the BSCI provider firmware, because the OS is not immediately ready for the secondary cores. I'll explain that in a bit. In U-boot, most of this BSCI and synchronous exception handling code is actually in place already, and it's all generic code. So the U-boot entry point, is very much here in the start.s, and the BSCI synchronous exception handling code is here in BSCI.s. It's there both for ARM32 and ARM64. It's just in different subdirectories. All you as a user actually have to implement is the PSCI.c, which are the C callbacks of the actual PSCI functionality which perform the stuff which the PSCI function are supposed to do with the hardware, like start the CPU core, stop a CPU core. So all this stuff is generic, all this stuff is SOC specific, and if you decide to implement PSCI provider in U-Boot, you have to fill that in. If a U-Boot is configured as a PSCI provider, then U-Boot is running in EL3, that means in the highest execution level, exception level. That means U-Boot is not able to perform any SMC calls. So you have to make sure there are none, because otherwise the system would just hang on boot. The OS will be running in EL2, and it will be able to do SMC calls into the U-Boot synchronous exception handler. So this is something to keep in mind. Beyond that, if U-Boot is configured to be a PSCI provider, there is only really a little bit of additional setup when the U-Boot starts up. In this ARMv8 setup PSCI, and this code does basically that it takes parts of U-Boot which are marked with attribute secure, which is essentially the PSCI handling code. It copies it into an SRAM, then it sets up some MMU tables and flags this SRAM as with a secure bit. That means no code running in not EL3, that means anything lower than EL3, will be able to modify this secure handling code. And finally, the U-Boot sets up an exception vectors so that when the synchronous exception happens, it will land in the U-Boot synchronous exception handler and then enter the PSCI code. So when such a synchronous exception happens, the U-Boot synchronous exception handler is entered. So when like an OS does SMC call, it will land here in the ARMv8 PSCI.s handle sync. And at that point, the synchronous exception can be anything. So first we have to figure out whether this is even an SMC at all, or it could be a hardware fault, it could be an unknown SMC exception which we cannot even handle. If it is an SMC exception, we need to figure out whether it's 32-bit one or 64-bit one. Assuming it's an SMC64 on ARMv8, we still need to figure out whether this is even a PSCI exception, or it could be another type of an SMC. If it is a PSCI, then U-Boot looks up the callback function which implements the PSCI function ID, if it even exists in U-Boot. And if it does, then it sets up C runtime environment and jumps onto the C function, which then looks very much like this. And in this C function, you can just do like a write into a register and, for example, in this case, power off the system. And like, you don't have to care about the assembler before that. All you have to care about with the PSCI provider is very much this, because this is SOC specific and this is something you have to implement. Now, on SMP, there is this additional problem in that when the operating system running in EL2 requests from the PSCI provider that it wants to bring up secondary core, the operating system will pass through the PSCI a pointer for the OS entry point. But you cannot just turn on the secondary core, which will start up in EL3, and point it into the OS entry point, because this would be a security violation. You would essentially start the CPU core, which is running in the highest privilege level, and make it enter the operating system in some sort of a highest privilege level state, even though the OS is running in lower privilege state. So what happens there is the CPU core actually has to enter U-Boot. In the U-Boot init code, the CPU core gets configured, gets set in a defined state so that it can enter the OS. The CPU core GIC, the interrupt controller registers, are configured so that it can receive an IPI. Then the CPU core drops into EL2, and then the CPU core starts spinning and waiting for an IPI so that when the operating system is actually ready to receive the CPU core, it can ping it with an IPI. And the CPU core will then be released to the operating system, and it jumps to the operating system entry point, and then the operating system runs on two cores. So this is the detail with an SMP. Finally, here is a summary of what to do in case you want to use U-Boot as a PSCI provider. So you have to look up the GIG distributor and redistributor base. This is something which you find out in your SOC datasheet, or if there is a Linux device tree, it's already there. And define these two macros, GIG dbase and GIG rbase. Then you have to make sure that your DRAM is marked as non-secure, because sometimes it is marked as secure. And if it is marked as secure in the MMU tables, then your OS will not be able to access DRAM and it will crash. You potentially have to configure other security-related registers of the CPU. This is, again, SOC-specific. You have to look it up in your SOC datasheet. Then finally, the main part of the implementation is fill in your PSCI.c callback implementation, again, SOC-specific. And then remove the previous PL31 PSCI implementation blob, which potentially was ATF. Enable these U-boot config options, give or take, in the U-boot port config and compile, and then it should basically work. And in case it doesn't work, U-boot has the debug UART functionality. So if you have two UARTs on your machine, you can point the debug UART into the other UART, not the console UART, and use this dedicated lightweight printing mechanism to essentially print some sort of debug output from the U-boot PSCI provider, the secure part. Even while the Linux kernel is running, it is possible to get some debug UART prints out of this. Here are the config options which you used for that. Okay, and now since I'm through my slides, I promised an example. So this will be very boring. Here is U-boot. And if you are familiar with U-boot, this is how it looks, and it just looks all the same, except if you are familiar with U-boot on IMX8M Plus, or IMX8M in general, you may notice that there is no notice here. The notice comes from the ATF PL31 blob, and the blob is not there because the U-boot is the provider of that functionality now. But beyond that, I can boot the Linux kernel all the same. The Linux kernel detects that there is a PSCI interface in the firmware, which is now provided by the U-boot. The Linux kernel brings up the CPU cores. The CPU cores show up in proc CPU info, and the CPU cores just work. And that's actually all there is to show. It's exactly the same as it was with the blob, except now you have one less entry in the SBOM. So you no longer need the ATF PL31 blob, which is bundled with U-boot, because U-boot can do it now for you. And by the way, this stuff is now upstream since 2 days ago. In case you enable a debug UART, you will see some sort of a debug print out of the secure part of U-boot. For example, here is a PSCI CPU on 64. This is the Linux kernel sending the PSCI request to U-boot, and U-boot just brings up the CPU core then for the Linux kernel. And that's it. Thank you for your attention. Questions? Yeah.
So if you have an existing ATF implementing PSCI and you want to move to U-boot, you have to convert everything at once. There's no way to, like, step-by-step move functionality over.
So you see, the functionality is actually super simple. I mean, all you have to do is, like, turn on CPU core, turn off CPU core, then suspend and power off and reset, and this is, like, 200 lines of code. So it's like super simple, really. And it's actually all now upstream for IMX8M Plus, so we can actually just use that as an inspiration.